Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And just like that, we're back. Another edition of the Late Kick Extra podcast. You hear that? Some casuals would tell you it's the off-season, but this piece of paper begs to differ because it is loaded. It's what we would call a rundown, or as close as we get on this show to a rundown, and it is loaded with questions from all across the college football landscape and beyond. I've got probably about 80% college football and 20% loosely described as other on the show today. Appreciate you guys so much for listening. We're about to be on the road after we record this later today. The Pate State Speaker Series about to launch, and we're going to be face-to-face with a whole lot of head coaches this spring on Campi, plural of campus, this spring, various Campi, and we're going to give you a whole lot of behind the scenes. I am not going to beg you. I'm just going to solidly instruct you. Go follow on Instagram and Twitter at LateKickJosh, because that's where you see a lot of that you don't see on the show. All right, with that out of the way, let's dive into this morning slash afternoon's pod. First question from the Ian Fritz Show. Ian said, what's the timeline for the structure of college football, conference champ games, etc., to disappear and have a different structure? 2 years? 5 years? It's a good question. The answer is quickly. That's the timeline. So as you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm not going to bore you by walking down all those various roads, but you know that you see headlines every day about the college football playoff changing. You see headlines a lot, maybe not every day, but a lot about conference realignment. If you're a Florida State fan, if you're a Clemson or North Carolina fan, you've been paying very close attention to what's happening with the ACC. You may be paying attention to new media rights negotiations. You may be paying attention to none of it and don't care and just want to see football in the fall, which is why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm just going to tell you it's happening quickly. So if you're like me, I don't like it at all. I am notoriously resistant to change for the sake of change. I like positive change. I just don't think all this is positive. But in terms of realignment, something's about to happen this year. You will have announcements, I think, before we start this season. You'll have announcements. Okay, so that's one. The portal and the NIL thing, that's more NCAA related. But as you've seen with that case involving Tennessee, Virginia, and the NCAA, that's gone up in smoke. You will have action on that this year at some point, I believe. I don't know what it's going to look like because I think it requires the conferences to be involved a whole lot more than the NCAA. The college football playoff, you're going to have action extremely quickly on that. You will know what the structure is going to be in 2026 in the next few months. That will come before we play football this fall. I believe you'll have an answer on that. So no matter what it is that has your interest right now, you'll have answers on it. And if you don't have interest in that and you just say, hey, man, I'm an Oklahoma State fan, tell me when we kick off this fall. I appreciate the fact that you're listening right now. You will have finality on that. So what I'm telling you is if you're extra fascinated in it, you're going to get answers. So hang tight. If you're not interested in it and you're just tired of it choking the oxygen out of the room that otherwise would be dedicated to real football, good news for you, too. It will be decided. It's not going to be dragged out over the next 5 years. Thank the Lord. It's not going to be dragged out that long. So I think you're going to have resolution one way or another pretty quickly. Next up, Don DePlowman Stan hit me and said, "You have famously been in the background of many iconic college football moments, many of which are now GIFs or photos. Which is your favorite?" This is easy. This is easy. I need to take you back to 2019. It was the year that Joe Burrow and LSU blow up. So I'm not at CBS yet. I'm down in Columbus, Georgia. We are doing a local late night college football show. We called it Late Kick. It since has come to CBS in 24/7, but in the meantime, it was down there. So anyway, LSU starts to blow up, but that summer, I went out on a little bit of a limb, and I predicted that they're going to win the SEC. And you know, Bama was the overwhelming favorite, as they usually are, but I felt something with LSU. So as LSU's wave started to build, we started to get noticed down in the Louisiana market. And so our little show emanating from Columbus, Georgia, all of a sudden starts to blow up a little bit. And I still owe a lot of credit to the LSU fan base for kind of putting us on the map, because we rode that wave right along with you guys. So anyway, LSU starts to roll. We get towards November, and they beat Bama, and then it's obvious LSU's going to the SEC championship game. Well, Kirby's got Georgia headed to Atlanta as well. So you remember where I'm at. I'm not in Louisiana. I'm in Georgia. I'm in Columbus, Georgia. Grew up there. Been around Georgia folks my whole life. Been a Georgia person my whole life. Notice I didn't say fan, I said person. And so there is an SEC championship game approaching. I thought the Las Vegas number on the game was insane. They put out LSU minus 4. And they rarely make mistakes, but they made a mistake on that one. So I hammered LSU minus 4 with every dime that I could muster. I irresponsibly bet LSU minus 4. The line, I think, went up to like 6 or something. But it was never close in the end. It was never close. But in the meantime, that week, as is often the case, a lot of folks started hitting me up because I was so confident in LSU in that game, as I should have been. And some of the Georgia folks started hitting me up on the show and started running their mouths. And it wasn't just, "I disagree with you." It's, "I disagree with you. You're an idiot." Y-O-U-R in typical fashion. "You're an idiot." And then they started talking about what Georgia was going to do. And Georgia was going to win this game, which is cool. But what I said is, "Back it up. Back it up. Will you bet me?" And no one would bet me on it. And so I go to the game. And I can get credentials at this point, so I'm covering the game. And LSU paints the walls with Georgia's blood. And I found my way down in the post game to the field behind the CBS post game interview where Jamie Erdahl at the time was interviewing Ed Orgeron. And I positioned myself behind them. And I knew, we're on national TV, it's the CBS feed, but I knew more so those folks back home were watching. And so I proceeded to mouth the words, "You hate to see it. You hate to see it." And if there it is. We're actually showing it in the studio right now in gift form. "You hate to see it." And you would think, if you didn't know any better, I'm just some rando in a white T-shirt. In many ways, I am. But you would think I'm some rando in a white T-shirt behind Ed Orgeron and Jamie Erdahl, just lurking, just loitering. And I was all of those things. But there was purpose behind the words coming out of my mouth, "You hate to see it," because I had Georgia folks barking at me, literally and figuratively, all week. "Georgia's going to win this game." And I'm like, "No, they're not." And they were like, "Yes, they are." And then they started to call me names. So what do you do? What did Mima always tell me? "Joshua, when people call you names, don't call them names back. Wait till whatever you're arguing about ends. Get behind the postgame shot on national TV and dunk on them." Thank you, Mima. And so I dunked on many a Georgia citizen that day. Some of them have since made amends with me. Others I haven't heard from since. But I think it was worth it in the end. We move on. This is a very important question coming up here. Everybody's talking about changes, but there's one change, even before this latest round of talk, that a lot of people talked about. Take a little sip of cold coffee here for a second. Beverage of choice this morning as we record. Thomas hit me and said, "Does the changing landscape in college football make it inevitable that Notre Dame joins a conference?" Maybe. Maybe. Remember we did Late Kick Live Sunday night, and I told you big, big change is imminent. But I also said, remember, nobody knows what's going to happen. And that includes commissioners of conferences. That includes the AD at Notre Dame, That includes all the power players. They can't know how it's going to end, even though they will ultimately decide it, because there are too many moving parts in play. So the best I can do for you on this answer is they may join a conference. And if you know the history of this question, this conversation, even getting a maybe when it comes to the question, will Notre Dame join a conference, is a big deal. Because to this point, the answer has been, nope, not doing it, not doing it. Now, when I was a kid growing up in the South, I was taught you should hate Notre Dame for this. You should hate Notre Dame because they think they're better than everybody else and they seek independence and everyone else has had to join a conference. Well, the thing about it is everyone hasn't had to join a conference. They've chosen to. Notre Dame could have joined a conference. They chose not to. Notre Dame chose not to because they value different things or they have leverage that other brands do not have. Well, when I was 9 years old, I hated them. When I got older, I started to think, self, wouldn't you do the same thing with Pate State? Would I take Pate State and just voluntarily join the Big Ten if I could maintain independence and a major network came my way and offered me nine figures per year to broadcast my games? The answer is no. No, I would probably maintain my independence, and you would too, is my guess. But we're never in that position, are we? So instead of respecting the game, we hate the game. Well, I don't hate Notre Dame. In fact, it's my favorite campus to go to. I introduced someone to Rudy for the first time the other day, and I know you guys have swinging thoughts and philosophies on the movie Rudy, but I do think it portrays very vividly what the experience of going to a Notre Dame game is and the aura, the mystique around the program. I buy into that stuff. That's not fairy tale stuff to me. I buy into it. And if you've never been there before, I'd ask you, just reserve judgment until you've gone. Just, it's okay if you've been there and it doesn't appeal to you. It's not for you. That's cool. But go there. Don't be hating on it. You know, living in Frankfort, Kentucky, you've never been up there and you've just had your grandpa tell you, oh, Notre Dame, man, they're the bane of our existence. Well, go. And then tell me what you think about it. I'm not mocking Southern accents there. I have one. Probably thicker than yours. I just put a little blanket over it for on-air purposes. But with Notre Dame in the conference, I think it could happen here because I think maybe we approach a point where the structure is such that you can't afford to be independent anymore. But I don't know that. I don't know. You see, right now, I think behind the scenes, there is a lot of conversation about the two super league sort of format, Big Ten, SEC, and then maybe collectively everyone else forms a third entity. I don't mean as a conference. I mean in terms of seeding the playoff. And that's really convoluted and complicated, and I'm not even going to bother to try and map it out because it's nothing. It's like trying to nail Jell-O to a wall right now. But if we were to get to a point where the Big Ten and the SEC pretty much just negotiate their own postseason and that's where all the money goes, Notre Dame either has to be a part of that or forego access to that pot of money. Now, they've done it in the past, so maybe they do it again. I don't know. But I think if we were to put percentages on it, I'll close with this. I think the percentages are higher right now that they're going to join a conference soon than they have been at any point in most of our lifetimes. That's as good as I can do for you. Notre Dame in a conference. Whoops to the thunk it. Next up is Adrian from Kingwood, Texas. What is your origin story regarding your interest in tornado chasing? Well, when I was a youth down in the South, everyone is immersed in tornado culture in the South. So I was always fascinated with them. I also had a fascination with trains, had a fascination with public sanitation, believe it or not. Wanted to be a garbage man for a long time. I think one of the worst things to happen to this country is the mechanization of sanitation collection. Meaning, instead of putting real-life grown men on the back of garbage trucks to dump cans into the back the old-fashioned way, you drive around a truck with a lifeless mechanical arm on the side, and it just picks your garbage up, and it dumps it, and it puts it back down, and it moves on. And there's no personality. There's no relationship between garbage man and household or garbage man and young child standing down at the driveway with a platter of cookies that his mother has baked for the sanitation workers. What happened? Like, what happened to America? Anyway, so, you know, I decided there probably was not the financial upside in sanitation that I wanted. So I chose to do sanitation as a hobby, and I just hopped freight trains. Real story, true story. And I looked at storm chasing. And I said, what if one day I can talk about college football for a living, and that season is always in the fall, and that leaves spring open, and spring is the height of tornado chasing season. What kind of world would that be? Well, the answer is a dream world, and here we are. Here we are. The best part of my job is the fact that we are very, very mobile in spring. We can make our own schedule in the spring. We could do a show on Sunday or Tuesday or Thursday or any of the days. We can record whenever we want to. We can record on the road. And so, you know, if there's a storm popping in Fairdale, Illinois, we can be up there. If there's something popping in Greensburg, Kansas, we can be up there. El Reno, Oklahoma, we can be there. I'm just naming famous tornado towns at this point. Andover, Kansas, we can be there. And it is fun. It's exhilarating. Saw Twister in 1996 with the rest of America. I was enthralled and captivated with most of the rest of America. And I don't know. I'm just fascinated by it. I am fascinated by nature, period. But forces of nature, and especially tornadoes, just severe weather in general, but tornadoes have always fascinated me. And like I said, I've met 12 right now. That's my count. I've seen 12 in person, and we're looking to grow that number safely but aggressively this upcoming year. Nothing like it to me, nothing like it. I think most people are terrified and should be of tornadoes and proximity to them, but I seek it because that's how messed up I am in the head. Tornado culture, storm chasing culture is awesome, though. It's like college football. It's a much smaller culture because not nearly as many people love doing that as love going to watch Ohio State, Michigan. But the culture of storm chasing when you're out on the road is awesome. It's not a healthy lifestyle. A lot of gas station food. But if you're like me, and candidly, if you're like a lot of people who listen to this pod and you grew up on gas station food, it's not really all that big a change. The change is when you hang out with management and he wants to take you to a restaurant with more stars in its name than most of the recruits that your school lands in any given cycle. That's the change. Okay, gas station food. I mean, I grew up on the Chevron on Highway 315 just off I-185 in Fortson, Georgia, Mulberry Grove exit for those familiar. I grew up eating from that place multiple times per week. So, hey, man, storm chasing culture and cuisine, very familiar to me. Moving on this college football podcast. Moving on. Stan asked, how would you explain to an NFL fan what's great about college football outside of the pageantry? And listen to this sentence from Stan. He said, I feel like the athletic imbalance and the NFL has a fluorescent light cubicle feel to me. Yes, Stan. Yes, immunity. That's perfectly stated. The athletic imbalance, it does separate college football. Now, if you're one of the have-nots, that's not always fun. Like, if I'm talking to Kent State fans right now, you don't love that Penn State can cherry-pick relative to you taking scraps. No, that's not fun. But talk about college football in general, and that is one thing that separates it from the NFL. The other thing, though, Stan put it really well. I've been looking for that metaphor, man. The NFL is the highest-level football product on the face of the earth. I know that. I love college football way more, but I know the NFL is the cream of the competitive crop. And it's where college football players are aspiring to ultimately end up. But as a fan, as a connoisseur of the product, there's nothing like the Saturday game to me. And especially as someone who covers it, there's nothing like the Saturday game to me. Stan put it very, very accurately. I've always watched the NFL, and I felt like that was walking through an office building. And the fluorescent lighting is kind of like everything looking the same. And it's just cubicle after cubicle. It's cookie cutter stadium after cookie cutter stadium. And they're all in major cities. And then 24 hours earlier, I've been watching college football. And college football is anything but that. College football is 100-year-old stadiums with some portions of that stadium having been renovated and other portions not renovated. I was at Missouri this past year. And this is not a knock on Missouri because I love this. And the thing I'm about to talk about is evident in many places. I actually put this on social at Late Kick Josh. In Missouri, we're up a tunnel at halftime. And there is a brand new addition to their stadium. And their weight room at Missouri is actually built into their stadium, by the way. So there's the weight room. There's this nice booster area in one of the end zones. And right across the walkway from that is this area where there's like, it's just dirt. And there's some old bricks that have fallen off the stadium. And there's like old scraps of wood that look like they were used to build some of the props in the movie National Treasure. and they're just like under the stadium in this area where humans probably haven't ventured since I've been born. And you look to one side and it's palatial, and you look to the other side and it's landfill. And that's perfect encapsulation of what college football stadiums are like. It looks like just pieces of Lego or a Rector set that were put together in different periods. It is not congruent. It is very asymmetrical. The conferences don't even have the amount of teams that the name suggests they have in them. And that's not a new thing. That's been the case forever. Imagine explaining the Big 12. Imagine telling people there were once 12 teams, then it went to 10, but then it ballooned to 14, but then it got rated down to 8, but now it's at 16. That's the story of the Big 12. Also, there are situations like Notre Dame being independent. There are situations like one team being in one conference that's known as G5, but then it elevates to P5. And then you've also got regional rivalries. Some of them are in conferences. Some of them aren't in conferences. You've also got the postseason apparatus that, while it's crazy, at least it's our crazy. Can you imagine the NFL having a committee? Florida State fans want to turn it off right now. Can you imagine the NFL having a committee where the Eagles go 13-4, but the committee says, not this year, guys. And they're like, but we won our division. And they're like, we know, but Jalen Hurts, you hear what his last name, do you know what the first four letters of his last name is? He's hurt. We're not putting you in the playoff. Yeah, college football is a different world, man, different world. And I don't think there's any, I know there's nothing out there like it. So there's some good and some bad with that. But I have always pushed back when people who grew up on the Sunday game or grew up covering the Sunday game look at the Saturday game and they want to try and fix it because it doesn't look exactly like the Sunday game. Some of the ideas are good. Other ones, you need to leave the Saturday game alone. It's not supposed to be perfect. It's not supposed to be completely rounded on the edges. There should be some sharp edges here and there. There should be some uneven portions here and there. It's college football. That's the way it's supposed to be. The NFL, by the way, or NBA or MLB, those are entities. Those are sports leagues that were built with one thing in mind, to be that sport. College athletics were just originally universities that had no athletic appendages. And they were in different parts of the country, and some of them were around 100 years before some of the others existed. And then slowly, one by one, they decided we're going to have football or basketball, and they had to round themselves into form, and they had to collect themselves into conferences, and they had to make rules. And the point is, they built themselves for one thing, education, and then these other things just came along. Well, it's never going to be symmetrical because it's built that way. The NFL was not originally built to be, you know, a bunch of brokerage houses, and then one by one they decided, hey, let's have a football team. Well, the NFL would look really weird if that's the way it was built. So I don't hate on it. I don't care if there seems to sometimes be a lack of design. Some of you claim sometimes that there's not a design to when I do this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
You hear that? That's me clapping for myself. Since I don't have any free hands right now, I have to rustle the paper. That's me clapping for myself because I know I just dive-bombed you with another ad toss. And someone will say they saw it coming and that person will be lying. That's okay. That's okay. As long as you lie for the right reasons around here, no one gets mad. Let's move it on. Adam from Edmond, Oklahoma hit me and said, hey, what would have happened to Nick Saban's career if Rich Rodriguez had taken the Alabama job? I know a lot of you were in college. You probably don't remember this day. But in late 2006, I remember it vividly. Mike Shula had been fired as the head coach at Alabama. So there was a thought that Alabama's time as a premier brand and program was done. Okay, once ruled college football, but they got stuck on Bear Bryant for too long, and they had incestuous hiring practices, which is accurate, and they had faded. Kind of the way people talk about Nebraska now, they were talking about Alabama. Okay, so especially in the South, people wanted Alabama dead and buried. And so they, you know, talk radio in the South was just inundated with Alabama thinks they're going to go hire Nick Saban, but they're really not going to be able to get him. So Alabama makes a run at Saban, who had left LSU, and he was 2 years into his career as the Dolphins head coach. And he turns him down. And he has his famous press conference. I'm not going to be the head coach at Alabama. That's early December. So then all of December goes by. It was the longest month in the history of Alabama. And you hear all these names. And I am not kidding you. Jim Grobe, who I think was the head coach at Wake Forest at the time. Jeff Tedford was at Cal. You had Rich Rodriguez, obviously, at West Virginia. He was tearing it up, but it was West Virginia, and people didn't know because they were in the Big East at the time, and people didn't know, would that translate to the SEC? Now, of course, this is the time where Urban Meyer has translated to the SEC fairly well, so their minds were eased a little bit on that front. Well, anyway, late December, they go and they announce, there's breaking news, Rich Rodriguez, head coach at West Virginia, has agreed to be the new head coach at Alabama. All right, so they wanted Saban, they didn't get him, but Rich Rod is still one of the hottest names. It would very much be like the Kalen DeBoer hire they just made. Only I would argue DeBoer probably thought of a little bit higher nationally, but it would be comparable. Of a name a little outside the box, no ties to Alabama. He's done it one place, but is he going to do it on the big stage? He's got a really impressive offense, but will his team be complimentary enough? Will he recruit in the South? They were saying a lot of that stuff about Rich Rod. So Rich Rod takes the job, or does he? So I remember in Columbus, Georgia, the red light I was at the morning that I was listening to ESPN radio, and Colin Cowherd was on at the time, and he's going to break, and he actually, he does the, you know, the paper rustle in the mic, and he says, hey, that Rich Rodriguez to Alabama deal is not finalized. That's how he tossed to break. It was the best tease that I've ever heard in my life. So, I mean, I am glued to that radio, waiting the 3.5 or 4 minutes during the break for it to come back. So they come back, and there's word out of Tuscaloosa that Rich Rodriguez has rescinded his accepting of the Alabama job. He's staying at West Virginia. They're offering him a contract extension. And at that point, you're like, are they right? Is Alabama really just SOL? Are they really going to be regulated to a second or third tier program? Is Alabama secret poverty in college football now? So Christmas comes and goes, nothing. New Year's comes and goes, nothing. January 2nd, you start to hear the rumblings. Nick Saban's back in play. And everyone, even Alabama fans for different reasons, but everyone's like, it's not happening. And Alabama fans are like, they're kind of doing the reverse psychology. It's not going to happen. Please let it happen. It's not going to happen. Nah, come on. Come on, Nick. Come home. January 3rd, 2007, Nick Saban accepts the Alabama head coaching job. There's the legendary scene from him getting off the plane there on the tarmac in Tuscaloosa, and I'm pretty sure the entire city is there to greet him. People he's never met are kissing him. It's great. Just wonderful. And so he wades through a sea of crimson humanity there. He has a police escort that would be very similar to what the president of the United States would have if he visited Tuscaloosa. And he makes his way down University Boulevard over to the Malmore Athletic Facility, which may or may not have been named that at the time. Malmore has since passed on. That's the AD who went and got Nick Saban. So he's a forever legend at Alabama. And everything changed in college football that day. But what if it didn't happen? What if Rich Rod took the job is the question. Well, I think Saban would have come back to college football. But let me entertain something for just a second. He may have just stayed in the NFL. I think one of the biggest myths that people tell about the history of football in this country is Nick Saban was a failure in the NFL. Like, think in your mind right now. You probably think this. When you say Nick Saban, NFL, tell me the story. You say, oh, man, he flamed out in the NFL. He didn't. He was like two games below 500. He had a better two-year start than Parcells or Belichick had in their careers, and also wanted Drew Brees, and team doctors turned it down. And unlike college football, Nick Saban does not get final say in the NFL. Nick Saban is cut out for the NFL. Nick Saban, I have no doubt, was going to succeed in the NFL. So if he had stayed in the NFL, he would have been fine, would have ended up being a winner, and it would be a moot point. But because he was only 2 years in, people just misremember things, man. People misremember. Like, he was in the playoff hunt up until the last few weeks of the season his second year. They were fine. Like, they were fine. So anyway, beat Belichick twice. Vintage Patriots Belichick beat him twice when he was down there. So he comes to Alabama, but if he doesn't, if he stays in the NFL, Miami would have been a winner under him. But if he doesn't, if he does come back to college football, where does he go? Probably not Alabama, so where does he go? Because Rich Rod, I think, would have been okay. Does he end up at Texas? Mack Brown's got a few years left at that point. Does he end up at Texas? Does he end up maybe somewhere else in the SEC? Maybe he goes to Tennessee. Maybe Phil Fulmer's career still fades out around the time it did. Now, we all know Saban had a lot to do with a lot of those careers flaming out when they did, but you know as well as I do, big jobs come open all the time for many different reasons. So who's to say that he wouldn't just have taken another big-time job and done everything there that he ended up doing at Alabama? Because I'm a believer there's several programs out there that he could have done with what he did with Alabama. Not 50 of them, but there are several of them. And I just wonder where he would have wound up. Where at Auburn? Maybe he winds up at Auburn. Can you imagine the shiver that goes up the spine of an Alabama listener when I even suggest that? Anyway, fun exercise there. Those are the most fun exercises, the ones that we can't know if we're right or wrong on. You know what? We'll have Nick Saban on the show. Next time we get him on the show, I'm going to throw that at him. If you didn't take the Bama job, what do you think happens? See where he goes with it. Next up, Roll With The Take hit me from Niota, Tennessee, and said, first of all, love the show and your take on everything college football. You've said several times that the expanded playoff is worse for the regular season than the four team, but have you given thought to the fact that once a team loses two regular season games, their fan base is severely disinterested in what happens? Yeah, I've given thought to that. I've also given thought to why that is. I don't ever start this conversation at this point. Anyone who listens to or watches the show knows when we talk about this whole meaningless game thing, I don't talk about the here and now, because you're doing a disservice to the reality of the situation if you just say, well, if we don't expand the playoff, there will be meaningless regular season games. You can call it that if you want to. Even if you are of that mentality, which I'm not, all I need is two teams and the ball for it to be a meaningful game to me. But even if you do believe, hey, these late November games feel meaningless if you're not in the playoff race, you can't just start it there. You've got to start it where it actually began, because we never said that. In 2004, you weren't telling me two lost teams were out of it and their games were meaningless, because at that point, you had not had your mind reverse engineered to think that meaning was solely tied to whether you had playoff implications on your game. I know my younger audience does not get this because you never lived it. You've only lived in an era where the well has been poisoned by the playoff, and therefore you've only lived in an era where you're thinking about college football begins with the postseason as everything deriving its meaning from. But it hasn't always been that way. There was a time where you came into a season and you knew, yeah, there are a few teams that could probably win a championship this year. Most of them can't. And then you kind of reclassified teams and said, all right, so for North Carolina this year, they're not going to win a national championship. I think 8 wins would be good for them. And then as their season went on, that was your barometer. And if they went on to compete for a title out of the blue, great. But what your mind was thinking is they lose one game in week 3. Oh, man, still everything's in play. They lose their second game beginning of November. Hey, it's okay. They lose the 3rd game the week after. Got to lick our wounds and regroup, and they get a win the second to last week of the season, and they're 7-3 or 7-4 heading into the final weekend. Today, you'd call that game meaningless. Back in the day, everything was on the line. Why? Because you had properly placed the barometer for North Carolina football at 8 wins. They've got a chance to win their 8th game against Georgia Tech this Saturday. And if they win it, they succeeded relative to your expectation. And also, bowls meant a lot. Bowls meant a lot. They could make the Citrus Bowl if they win this Saturday. And that was the way college football used to be. No one called the games meaningless, is the point. So if you're asking me, do we need to change it to make the games meaningful today? My thought never is yes or no. I always go back and I provide that context I just gave. And maybe that helps a lot of you understand the source of my anger on a lot of these fronts. But the other thing is, I know we can't go back in time. I know that. My whole plea has been, if we can't go back in time, can we at least take the people responsible for getting us to where we are now and get them out of the room and remove decision-making privileges from them? Hey, that's the best we can do now because we can't go back in time. So I don't want people who made the mess creating more of a mess. And now, as for the follow-up, how do you create meaning in the regular season? I think there are a lot of formats being worked on right now that would both expand the playoff and maintain meaning in the regular season. I talked about that the other night. I'll talk about it more moving forward. I'm not perfect by any stretch, but I think there are ways we can accomplish that. Okay, let's move on. And by the way, I've got Colin recording some of this for video use, so that's why it sounded like there was kind of a hard out right there. I'm actually going to talk about what those formats are in just a second, so hang tight on that, because I think there are a lot of things happening behind the scenes in college football. You can't see them right now, but it's very, very important. Here's a question from Vestavia Hills, Alabama. What is your best advice for someone who wants to get into sports media? Do it, but do it after you've done proper research. So I got into sports media. It worked out fine for me, but I also had to think long and hard beforehand about the basic question of why would anyone care what I have to say? That's the question that I give when I do seminars, when I talk to college students. I did one this morning, actually. And I asked that student, why should anyone care what you have to say? It sounds like a very, very condescending question. It's not. It's the most brutally honest question. Because when you get in this business, you're at the core philosophical floor of what we're doing. We're talking to the most stubborn group of people in the world. We are all sports fans. I am. You are. your buddy is. We're all sports fans. Every sports fan is stubborn. Every one of us has something to say, and we don't really have a whole lot of attention to pay to other people talking. We want to talk. Every one of us wants to talk because we think we know it all. So that is a sports fan. That's a college football fan. That's an NHL fan. You're actually trying to endeavor being good enough at your craft to where the most stubborn group of people in the world shuts up to listen to what you have to say. That is a very hard thing to accomplish. So why would anyone care what you have to say? If you can't answer that question, that doesn't mean don't pursue sports media, but it means define that. You know, define what the overlap is of what you're good at and what you're passionate about and what people care about, and then start to plot your course. That's the best advice that I can give you. Also, don't be scared at all of how saturated the market is. Nemo always said, a lighthouse is just as tall in the middle of the ocean as it is in the middle of a lake. Meaning, if you stand out, you stand out. Doesn't matter how much water there is, how much saturation there is around you. And the other thing, this would get in the weeds a little bit, so I'm not going to waste time on it. Competition is the most misunderstood thing in this business. I swear to you, the oldest thing that I listen to is people talking about who they're competing against. I'm competing against this guy over here. I'm competing against that show. Think how you want to. Let me tell you how we do it. We don't have competition. There is not an individual or a personality in the space that we ever look at and compare ourselves to. There's not another show we compare ourselves to. In 1994, you had to do that. Because in 1994, it was pre-on-demand. It was pre-digital media, and it was a time-slot-oriented world. If you had a show at 4 o'clock, and I had a show at 4 o'clock, it was a fight to the death for every audience member, because every one of them you got was one I could not get. There is no YouTube at that time. There's no podcast. There's not even DVR. There's no going back for the audience member and watching both shows, therefore we both get credit for it. We gotta do what we can to get the audience. In 2024, that's not the case. It's an on-demand world. That means if you want to watch Klatt live and go watch me later, wonderful. I want you to do that. The high tide raises all boats today. So like Andy Staples does really good stuff over at On3. Go listen to the show. Pakel does stuff, good stuff over there. Go listen to it. Go listen to Joel Klatt. Go listen to all the folks. Make sure you listen to our show too. But my advice, humbly, is don't define competition as who else is in your space. Just worry about running your race. Define what your standard is and compete against the standard. Don't be competing against other people. What if you're capable of being way better than them, but since all you're doing is focusing on them, you take your foot off the gas as soon as you bypass them? How dumb would that be? You've lost. Even though you're number one, you've lost because you're not fulfilling what your potential is. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. So let's move on. Next up, Jeff said, hey, what's your ideal college football format in terms of composition of conferences and crowning a national champ? You don't want that from me, Jeff, from Lenexa, Kansas. You don't want that from me. Us, buddy, my perfect scenario is just we play the regular season and then we decide who's the champ at the end, and so be it. And it's very controversial, and I will admit a vast majority of you would hate that. So if I were to compromise with you, given what the structure is today, if I were to compromise with you, I guess I'd take the SEC, decide how big you guys are going to be. If you're going to 20 teams, just go ahead and do it. Take the Big Ten. If you're going to 20, go ahead and do it. And then split yourself into four divisions and take your division winners and have two semifinal games and a conference title game, and then produce your conference champ. That's one spot in the playoff, two spots in the playoff. The Big 12, I guess, could do the same thing. That's a third spot in the playoff. And then take everything else that's out there, G5s, everything, and just give me a fourth team and have a four-team playoff. That's the way I would do it, because it's really not a four-team playoff. If you think about it, it's an expanded playoff. It's just that a chunk of the playoff happens inside the conferences. And for the record, I'm not so sure that may not be where we're headed. I know that's being looked at right now. And I would be much more happy with that than I would elsewhere. Because if you think about it, it keeps the playoff field fairly small, but it also keeps everybody engaged. Because instead of being in a 20-team league, knowing that only two teams have a shot at the conference title, all of a sudden you have four divisions. Therefore, you have four division races in each of those conferences. A ton of teams are in play at that point. So I guess that's the way I would do it. But the shorter answer is there is no perfect format this day and age. Next up, this is a really good question. I may not go the direction that you thought I'd go, but this is a good question. 229 Dog with a couple of trophies from Bainbridge, Georgia asks, how do you think the increasing emphasis on analytics and data-driven decision-making is shaping college football strategies? Hiring. That's where it's shaping college football strategy. Hiring. So, I think the most one-sided fight in college football for a long time has not been Power 5 versus FCS teams. I have felt the most one-sided and lopsided fight in college football for a long time has been Jimmy Sexton versus the athletic director he's negotiating coaching contracts with. That's an unfair fight. That is men versus boys, and the boys aren't all that bright. And so I think nowadays the hiring process, not just for head coaches, but assistants on down, has gotten a lot smarter. And there are informed, data-driven minds in the room. Maybe not inside the walls of the athletic department, but trust me, there are very smart minds, hired guns out there, if you will, that can very much direct you towards the right hires, but I don't think it's been adopted industry-wide yet. You'd be stunned at how antiquated the hiring process is. I think you'd be disappointed, frankly. If you're a fan of a major program and you get a head coach in there and he's been there a few years and he's been fairly successful, you may think to yourself, that guy really knows how to hire. And you would think when you lose your wide receiver and tight end and outside linebackers coach, you would think that the process is he's got a list of names a mile long and he's got background on every one of them and he knows them better than they know themselves. And guys, I regret to inform you, that is not how hiring happens. The way hiring actually happens in this world for a lot of places is I'm the head coach. I'm represented by fill in the blank. And as soon as I need coaches, I call my representative and I say, who's on our payroll? Who should I go after? You heard me right. I am telling you, the coach is reaching out to the agent and the agent is providing a list of names. It leads to a lot of churn in the business because a lot of less qualified people are hired. A lot of people who are represented by the wrong agencies don't even get looks, even though they may be high caliber, and rinse and repeat. And it may surprise you that that's the way it works because you would think, man, if a head coach has his job on the line, shouldn't he be way, way more thorough with his hiring process? Well, the answer is, yeah, he should. But you need to also remember that agency that got that head coach's job also got him a $20 or $30 million buyout. So even if he does get fired, he's okay. And so that same agent that got you the $20 or $30 million buyout, if it falls through, is going to look at you and say, now, the trade-off is, got to give our guys looks. When you have openings, we got you this job at Pate State. Pate State's one of the premier brands in college football. It helps folks on our payroll now. It helps our clientele list. If they get rubbed with Pate State and they coach for you, and hey, man, you're the best in the game. You can win with anybody. This is the hiring process in major college football. It's not all that smart. So my advice would be never assume that there is a high-level scientific approach to hiring going on behind the scenes. I'm telling you, one day when I do not need this for a living anymore, I will give you some stories, but it's fascinating how little the head coach is actually involved in some cases in the hiring process. And another thing is, because of that, you have an opening. I think of it as the money ball of college football. You had back in the day, you had the Yankees outspending the Oakland A's 5-1. Oakland had to respond. And if you've seen the movie Moneyball, you know how they responded. And there were just glaring weaknesses in the system because the big boys looked around and they could be very, very loose with their approach and they could just spend their way out of problems. Well, that meant that there were a lot of cracks where very smart people could fill. And Oakland did it. And in this sport, there are a lot of good coaches out there. There are coaches unemployed right now that are, Scotty O'Hara is a good example, just out of the blue. Scotty O'Hara is a wide receivers coach. He was at UTEP last year, but he got elevated to the OC, and the whole staff got wiped out. And we've got every coach in our internal system graded, every one of them. We got him as a top 20 wide receiver coach in the country. Scotty O'Hara, as of last week, is unemployed. Probably not represented by the right folks, or, you know, got fired a little late in the cycle, or whatever the case may be. Smart people know Scotty O'Hara is available. Okay. It's just that, are the programs listening to those smart people? And the answer sometimes is no. So you want to know where data-driven analytical mentality needs to be applied more? It's the hiring process. That's where.
Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
Next up. Josh, love the name, from Adele, Georgia, said, in my opinion, the answer is no, but I want your take here. Is there any incentive for a conference championship game if you're the SEC or the Big Ten? Yes, yes, yes. So a great question, because this is being miscontextualized a lot out there right now. So a lot of the proposals out there that you've read indicate that the playoff's going to expand, right? And a lot of the proposals you've read have it going from 12 teams to maybe 14 or 16, and it has the Big Ten and the SEC with a certain number of guaranteed auto bids. Okay, so there's a line of thinking out there that goes like this. Wait, if we're going to get multiple teams in, why would I want to go to the conference title game? Because actually, if you go to the conference title game and you lose, you ended up having it worse than your third best team. Because neither one of you are going to get first round byes, but the third best team did not have to go to Atlanta and play an extra game in the SEC title game. Therefore, they're more rested. They're still in the playoff. Whereas you may have gone and suffered injuries, got nothing for it, and you still have to go to the playoff and play the same amount of games. That makes the conference title game lose meaning. Okay? And I am telling you point blank, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I will promise you the SEC and the Big Ten are not signing off on a format that allows that to happen. That's why I'm confident, and it's an informed confidence, because I've had several people involved in the process talk to me about it, and I appreciate you guys for keeping us in the loop. All sources protected here. I've been told that's why they're paying so much attention to expanding however they're going to expand and getting the Big Ten and the SEC to whatever size they're going to be, but then splitting into divisions and making sure divisional play and the race for the conference title has maximum meaning. And I think that if you talk about, for example, four divisions in a conference, if you want to have your four auto bids in the playoff, make sure those four teams get your four auto bids, you know, something like that. That makes sure that every one of those division races maintains importance. Therefore, the regular season has maximum importance, but also incentivizing that conference title game to where even if you lose it, you're getting a place at the table that is better than the teams that weren't in the conference title game. They've got to have that. They will have that. There is no world, I promise you there's no world, where the SEC and the Big Ten are ever signing off on a format where the conference title games lose their relevance. They can't. It's a non-starter. Do you know how much money that they have had given to them for the rights to broadcast those games? Do you really think ESPN owns the rights to the SEC championship game and they're going to say, you know, we paid all this money, but we don't care. You know, take it, leave it, we don't care. You think Fox is doing that with the Big Ten title game? Of course not. Absolutely not. So those voices are in the room, is my point. Fox and ESPN, big networks in general, are heavily involved in these discussions. Now, you may not think they're supposed to be, but they are. And so, yeah, conference title games are not going anywhere. And I also don't think they're going to be allowed to lose their importance. That's my take on that. I appreciate you guys listening. Do me one favor. Make sure you subscribe to the pod, because a lot of you think you're subscribed, but you're not. So check. Make sure you're subscribed. And that's it. That's all. I appreciate you guys so much for listening. Make sure you share it with five friends. Until next time, for Bradley, the associate, and producer Jesse, and director Colin, I'm Josh Pate. Take care. Have a great rest of your day, and God bless.
Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit GamblingHelplineMA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.